Chapter 6, The Coming of Disciples, in Vision and in the Flesh. Quote, I had seen Keshub before I actually met him. I had seen him and his party in my samadhi. In front of me sat a room full of men. Keshub looked like a peacock sitting with its tail spread out. The tail meant his followers. I saw a red gem on Keshub's head, and that indicated his rajas. He said to his disciples, Please listen to what he, a master, is saying. I said to the Divine Mother, Mother, these people hold the views of Englishmen. Why should I talk to them? And then the mother explained to me that it would be like this in the Kali Yuga. It certainly was to be like that, as the last 11 years of Sri Ramakrishna's life demonstrate. No longer was the spiritual light of Dakshineshwar to be shaded by the provincial proprieties of language, caste, culture, or personal convenience. The meeting of the Master with Keshub Chandra Sen, who had recently succeeded Devendranath Tagore as de facto leader of the Brahmo Samaj, introduces the open door phase of Ramakrishna's life, wherein teaching, visiting, and the attentions of the public became daily affairs. One account says that the Master had seen Keshub long before from a distance at a religious meeting where the latter was meditating, and had remarked that he was the only boy there whose meditation was successful. Keshub did not, however, become a disciple in the technical sense of the word. The relationship between him and Sri Ramakrishna is difficult to define and makes an interesting study. We may remark only that much has been written about Ramakrishna's influence on the Brahmo Samaj and its leaders, but the contact also had its effect in the other direction. These modern Brahmagyanis, as the Master called them after his vision, would come to him with their questions about knowledge of Brahman and their predilection for the formless aspect of God, and in a way it affected him. He sums it up in this way, quote, Formerly, believers in God with form used to visit me a great deal, and then the modern Brahmagyanis began to arrive. During that period, 1874 to about 1880, I used to remain unconscious in samadhi most of the time. Whenever I regained consciousness, I would say to the Divine Mother, Oh Mother, please don't give me Brahmagyana. We should mention that it was rare for Sri Ramakrishna to give interpretations of the symbols in his vision, as he does in the above quotation. For example, the gem in Keshub's cap is rajas, the tail his followers. Apparently M. Mahendranath Gupta and Balaram Bose were the devotees of whom the Master next had prevision. They appeared in the remarkable vision of Sri Chaitanya's kirtan, which came to him as he stood outside his room, probably on the north veranda. He saw in the direction of the Panchavati a crowd of people moving in waves, as it were, with spiritual fervor, leading the party and absorbed in the love of God was Sri Chaitanya. Moving ahead with slow step, accompanied by Nityananda and Advaita on either side. Some of the devotees were in a mood of spiritual inebriation, some expressing themselves in ecstatic dance. This crowd, which was so great that there seemed to be no end to it, flowed forward and disappeared behind the trees. Some of the faces seen in that crowd he remembered. He said to Mahendranath, or M, who met him first in 1882, "He who dwells in me tells me beforehand what particular class of devotees will come to me. When I have a vision of Gauranga, I know that devotees of Gauranga are coming. When I have a vision of Kali, the Shaktas come. Once I saw Chaitanya's party singing and dancing near the Panchavati, between the banyan tree and the Bakul tree. I think I saw Balaram there, and you too." On another occasion, he told the devotees that he saw the companions of Chaitanya, not in a trance, but with these very eyes. "Formerly," he says, "I was in such an exalted state of mind that I could see all these things with my naked eyes. But now I see them in samadhi." He had said this to M once before, on the first day of 1883, and it is one of the most significant remarks we have from the Master's lips, because in the first place it carries the clear implication that visions which occur in the waking state with full external consciousness, or put another way, visions in which the figures live and move in the public world, indicate a more exalted spiritual condition than those experienced in trance. And in the second place, it seems to say that the Master felt at the time of the remark that his mind had in some sense descended to a lower plane. But, as we shall see, the assessment of his own condition was to fluctuate frequently in the next 3 years. In this connection, we should note that it is difficult sometimes to decide whether an experience recounted by Sri Ramakrishna should be called a vision. Take the following example. "Once at Sihor, I fed the cowherd boys. I put sweets into their hands. I saw that these boys were actually the cowherd boys of Vrindavan, and I partook of the sweets from their hands." End of quote. Now, this is not what is usually called a vision with open eyes, and yet the Master sees the boys as completely identical with the cowherds of Vrindavan. The spiritual significance of such experiences must not be ignored, and since these were increasingly common in his last years, we have taken many of them into account in the pages to follow. It was to Sihor, Hriday's village, that Ramakrishna had gone in 1875 in his last visit to Kanwarpur. Staying at Sihor, he heard of the fervor of the kirtan performed by Vaishnavas living in the nearby villages of Belta and Shyam Bazar, and became eager to witness the kirtan and to join it. The effect of his participation was spectacular, and his fame as an ecstatic drew kirtan parties from miles around. The area became filled with ecstatic dance day and night. As Sri Ramakrishna entered the village of Shyam Bazar, he had a vision of Sri Chaitanya. He once said that at Hriday's house, he had a vision of Gauranga, who wore a black bordered cloth. From this he understood, he said, that those villagers were Gauranga's devotees. During this period with the kirtan parties, especially for 3 days and nights, he experienced a storm of divine bliss in kirtan, and the rumor spread that a man had died 7 times in the village and come back to life just as often. At one party in the house of his host, Natabar Goswami of Belte, the master had a vision of Krishna and the gopis. He felt that his subtle body was walking at Krishna's heels. It was one of the master's visions which gave rise to that heart-rending cry, so poignant and so candid, which he uttered from the rooftop for devotees of his own. Quote, "One day it was revealed to me that I had devotees, my intimate companions, my very own. I then felt an indescribable yearning to see you all. I felt like weeping, but could not, lest I should create a scene. Therefore, I would climb to the roof of the Kuti," that's the proprietor's mansion, "as soon as the bells and the conch shells of the evening service sounded in the temples, and thinking, 'One more day has gone and you have not come,' I would cry out with a longing heart, 'Oh, where are you all? Come here, I am dying to see you.' I used to pray to the mother, crying, 'Mother, if I do not find the devotees, I'll surely die. Please bring them to me immediately.'" End of quote. While meditating in the Kali temple, he once saw a Bhairava, a companion of Shiva, and said to him, "Why have you come?" "To do your work," the other replied. Long after, when Girish Chandra Ghosh had become intimate with Sri Ramakrishna, the latter identified him as that Bhairava. Who knows if the master's vision of the 7 sages was the very first intimation he received of Narendra's advent? We may imagine that some hint of the existence of such a disciple and their future confrontation may have entered the master's awareness before this vision took place. But we have no record of such, only his own account of this vision, and indeed it is one of the most, if not the most, elaborately delineated of his superconscious experiences. I quote in full, "One day in samadhi, I saw that my mind, going up by a luminous path, went beyond the gross world, studded with the sun, moon, and stars. It entered first into the subtle world of ideas. The more it ascended to higher and higher strata of that realm, the more did I see beautiful ideal forms of gods and goddesses existing on both sides of the path. It came gradually to the end of that region. I saw that a fence made of light separated the realm of the divisible from that of the indivisible. Leaping over that fence, the mind entered by degrees the realm of the indivisible. No person or thing having a form existed there. As if afraid to enter there, even the devas and devis possessing heavenly bodies exercised their authority over realms far below. But the very next moment I saw 7 rishis, having bodies consisting of divine light only, seated there in samadhi. I felt that in virtue and knowledge, love and renunciation, they had excelled the gods and goddesses, not to speak of human beings. Astonished, I was pondering over their greatness when I saw before me that a part of the homogeneous mass of light in this abode of the indivisible, devoid of the slightest tinge of difference, became solidified and converted into the form of a divine child. Coming to one of those sages and throwing its soft, delicate arms around his neck, it, the child, embraced him, and then, calling him with a voice sweeter than the music of a veena, made great efforts to wake him from samadhi. The sage did wake up, and with half-shut eyes beheld the child. I, seeing his bright expression, full of delight, thought that the child must be the treasure of his heart, that their familiarity was of eternity. The extraordinary divine child then expressed great joy and said to the sage, "I'm going. You must come with me." The sage did not reply, but his loving eyes expressed his assent. Looking on the child with eyes of love for some time, he entered again into samadhi. I was astonished to see that a part of the mind and body of that rishi, converted into the form of a bright light, came down to earth along the luminous path. Hardly had I seen Narendra when I knew that he was that rishi. End of quote. As many readers will know, Sri Ramakrishna later identified the divine child as himself. With regard to the fear of the gods to enter the realm of the formless and indivisible, this seems to be a characteristic reaction. We meet it again in another experience of the masters, to be related next, where devotees belonging to one realm peep over a wall at the formless and run away in fear. Note that in the above vision, the mind of Ramakrishna himself leapt over the fence without ado, and this was his lifelong characteristic. The vision of the seven sages offers numerous puzzles for those who like to ponder such things. How could the forms of the sages be seen in that formless realm? And how does a part of the mind and body of a sage come down to earth? No doubt such questions will always baffle reason. The intuitive faculty seems a better one with which to dwell on divine visions, and we suspect that this particular vision will offer material for contemplation for many years to come. The other vision of Narendra's advent, of which we have record, also has its own fascination. The master first saw the indivisible Satchidananda. Inside it, he says, I saw two groups with a fence between them. On one side were Kedar, Chuni, and other devotees who believe in the personal God. On the other side was a luminous space, like a heap of red brick dust. Inside it was seated Narendra, immersed in samadhi. Seeing him absorbed in meditation, I called aloud, "O Narendra!" He opened his eyes a little. I came to realize that he had been born in another form, in Simla, a part of Calcutta, in the Kayastha family. At once I said to the Divine Mother, "Mother, entangle him in Maya. Otherwise, he will give up his body in samadhi." Kedar, a believer in the personal God, peeped in and ran away with a shudder. End of quote. Here we have a truly odd situation. Sri Ramakrishna sees his future disciple in a form different from that which he took, yet in the vision he is able to call the boy by his given name. The year 1881 arrived, and with it the master's beloved disciple, Rakhal, who was to become his most intimate companion. In his vision of the advent of Narendranath, Sri Ramakrishna had assumed the form of a child. This time, the child came to him. First he saw in vision a boy standing under the banyan tree in the temple grounds. A little later, in another vision, the Divine Mother appeared and placed upon his lap a little boy, saying, "He is your son." I started in terror to hear this, Ramakrishna tells us, and said, "How is that? How can I have a son?" The mother smiled and explained, "He is not your son in the ordinary physical sense, but in a spiritual sense. He will be your all-renouncing son." I was consoled, and very soon Rakhal came, and I recognized him at once as that boy. The master told M that he had once said to the Divine Mother, quote, "Certainly I shall not have any children, Mother, but it is my desire that a boy with sincere love for God should always remain with me. Give me such a boy." That was why Rakhal had come. Again, moments before Rakhal Chandra was brought to Sri Ramakrishna by his relatives, who were devotees, the master suddenly saw a lotus blooming with 100 petals on the bosom of the Ganges. Quote, "Each of its petals shone with exquisite loveliness. On the lotus were two boys dancing with anklets on their feet. One was Sri Krishna, and the other this boy of the previous visions. Their dance was indescribably beautiful. Every movement they made seemed to splash foam, as it were, from an ocean of sweetness." Sri Ramakrishna was lost in ecstasy. Those familiar with the subsequent life of Swami Brahmananda will remember that such a scene returned as a wonderful vision of his own at the very close of his life to remind him of the realm whence he came. It is to him that we owe the report of another of the Master's experiences. In the book The Eternal Companion, the Swami says that Sri Ramakrishna once told him, quote, "Once, while I was meditating in the temple, screen after screen of Maya was removed from my consciousness. Mother showed me a light more brilliant than a million suns. From that light came forth a spiritual form, and then this form melted away into the light itself. The formless had taken form and then melted again into the formless." End of quote. Then came Narendra and the familiar story of his first visit to the master's room, where from his stock of two or three songs he sang at the latter's request. "O mind, let us go back to our own abode." Sri Ramakrishna, seated probably on the small cot, was overwhelmed to hear him. Quote, "He sang as if in meditation, with the whole of his mind and heart. I could not control myself and was in bhava samadhi." End of quote. And for 6 months thereafter, The master was in that peculiar condition of anguish at separation from the beloved, which only rare souls experience. As if wrung by a wet towel is the way he described his heart when Narendra did not come to see him. Then again, like the child he was in spirit, he sometimes got angry at his beloved Narendra's skepticism. One day in Jadu Mullik's garden house nearby, the boy said to him, "The forms of God that you see are the fiction of your mind." "I was amazed," Sri Ramakrishna says in telling the story, "and I said to him, 'But they speak too.'" Narendra answered, "Yes, one may think so." "I went to the temple and wept before the mother. 'Oh, mother,' I said, 'what is this? Then is this all false? How could Narendra say that?' Instantly I had a revelation. I saw consciousness, indivisible consciousness, and a divine being formed of that consciousness. The divine form said to me, 'If your words are untrue, how is it that they tally with the facts?'" Thereupon I said to Narendra, "You rogue, you created unbelief in my mind. Don't come here anymore." Narendra was present in the room when Ramakrishna told this incident. It is one of the few visions in which the divine form is not identified. Sometimes Naren would be embarrassed by Sri Ramakrishna's unsparing attention to him and his welfare, and would become worried about the effect of this on the master himself. One day he reminded him rather harshly of King Bharata, who had become a deer in his next life by thinking so much of his pet deer, and warned the master to be on his guard. This disturbed the master's mind, and he replied that if Naren was right, it was indeed a sorry matter, for he could not do without seeing him. In his worry, he went again to the mother in the temple, no doubt, and shortly returned, beaming with delight. "Get away, you rascal. I'll never listen to you again. Mother said to me, 'You regard him as Narayana himself, the Lord. That is why you love him. The day that you do not see Narayana in him, you will not cast even a glance at him.'" We have this incident from Swami Vivekananda himself, who added that in this way the master refuted all his objections against his extraordinary love. There is a report by Swami Vivekananda of his conversation with Sri Ramakrishna during an early visit to the latter. The master told him that he, Narendra, had come to him at night, awakened him, and said, "Here I am." "But," said the Swami, "I knew nothing of this. I was sound asleep in my Calcutta house." In whatever way we may interpret the visions of Sri Ramakrishna, there was one who took them very seriously, and that one was Balaram Bose. From the conversations of the Holy Mother, we learn that the Master saw this disciple in a vision, wearing a turban on his head, and with his hands folded, standing by the image of Kali. When Balaram heard of it, he never saluted the Master thereafter in any other way, such as by touching his feet and so on. The Guru understood the disciple's mind, and teasing him or testing him, once said to him, "Balaram, my foot is itching. Please massage it gently." Balaram sent for one of the master's attendants. Sri Ramakrishna once saw Surendra in a vision as the child of the Divine Mother. He probably had a number of other visions previewing his intimate disciples. He spoke of various of them as having come with the Lord before, in his previous incarnations, as Rama, Krishna, Jesus Christ, but we have no definite details of these to enable us to add them to the record.